Reconvene, we recessed this morning after we completed our bills. We are going to take up the capital budget first. That's Senate Bill 192. We left off with, we held 11 amendments from the other night when we took this up, and we had a few more added since then. The first amendment we will take up will be admin number one. Senator Parnell.
Mr. Chairman, I would move admin number one. By way of explanation, this amendment would add $300,000 in the form of an appropriation to Alaska Public Broadcasting Grants to KAKM for construction of digital television facilities. The Congress and the FCC have mandated that all television stations in the U.S. convert to digital television or lose their license to broadcast by a date certain, by 2003 for public stations, by 2002 for commercial stations. KAKM is partnering with Anchorage commercial television stations to share an existing broadcast tower, an arrangement that will save each station at least $1 million. If they do not get this funding, they will not have the opportunity to partner with the other commercial stations, and in the end, it will cost even more. They anticipate getting $600,000 in federal funds, $300,000 in these state funds, and then $300,000 from other sources. I would urge your support of the amendment.
The amendment number one has been moved.
Chairman, is there objection?
I haven't asked. Is there objection to adoption of amendment number one? Hearing none, amendment number one has been adopted. That should bring us next to DEC number one. I understand is incorrect, but Senator Wilkins on DEC number one.
We won't be offering DEC number one.
Thank you. DEC number one has been withdrawn. Brings us to DEC number two. Senator Wilkins.
Brief at ease.
Senate Finance will stand at ease. It's back to admin number four that was just laid out to everyone. Senator Parnell, would you move admin number four?
Sure. On your behalf, Mr. Chairman, I would move admin number four.
The admin number four is a fund switch change using switching general funds to information service funds. The explanation is on the bottom of the amendment. Basically, the technology staff manages a large part of the technology and communication activities. The funding source for IT personnel and equipment comes from chargebacks to all departments. Because the department's commingles fund sources and payments, the IGA fund DOA estimates that the ISF, or the Information Service Fund, may be made up as much as 60% federal money. The land mobile radio migration request comes from the Department of Administration, the same department that manages the Information Services Fund. So this would switch the funding sources and still match the federal funds. There discussion on admin number four. Is there objection? Hearing none, admin number four has been adopted. That brings us next to Military and Veterans Affairs, number one. I will not be offering number one. It'll be withdrawn. Military and Veterans Affairs, number two, Senator Adams.
Mr. Chairman?
Actually, Senator Adams, if you look at Military and Veterans Affairs, number three, I think that covers what we're...
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. I'll remove number two, Mr. Chairman. Withdraw.
Thank you. Military and Veterans Affairs, number two, has been withdrawn. Brings us to Military and Veterans Affairs, number three.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Adams.
Senator is gone. I'm going to move number three. It has two things on it. And okay. If you don't mind.
Thank you, Senator Adams. Military Veterans Affairs, number three, has been moved. This reduces the amount from, well, it didn't reduce anything, we didn't adopt the other ones. This is an appropriation to the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation for a feasibility study for the Department of Defense Global Logistics Forward Mobility Hub in Anchorage for $150,000, and inserts another section for $10,000 to go to the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs for support for the 80th air show for the Elmendorf Third Wing. Is there objection to the adoption of Military and Veterans Affairs, number three? There is objection. Is there discussion? Roll call, please.
Senator Wilkins?
Yes.
Senator Kelly?
Yes.
Senator Green? Senator Phillips?
Yes.
Senator Donnelly?
Yes.
Senator Lehman?
Yes.
Senator Adams?
Yes.
Senator Parnell?
Yes.
Senator Tarkenton?
Yes.
Seven yeas, one nay.
We've got a 7-1 vote. Military and Veterans Affairs number three has been adopted. I'm just going to roll through my list instead of the handout, sir, and get that done. Next brings us to public safety. We held an amendment there. I believe it is public safety number two. Senator Adams.
Chairman, in way of explaining this is basically what I want to move is $171,000 from Southeast Emergency Communications. This is a new project, and it will be only partially funded. What I want to do is move that $171,500 to deferred maintenance of aircraft and vessels, Mr. Chairman. I think the money would be more well spent there than a new project, and with that, I move the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adams, I do not have that amendment.
Can I withdraw that, and then we can come back to it? It's just just producing it again.
This amendment is $282,000, and it has actual straight increase. So.
Now, mine is a net zero, and so I'm just switching.
Would you remove your motion to adopt it, then?
I remove my motion to adopt it, and I'll have that in just a minute, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. DPS number two has been withdrawn. We'll wait for a new amendment. That brings us next to DOT number three. That was offered by Senator Donnelly, and I believe we didn't officially withdraw that. It was covered in another amendment. Senator Donnelly.
I will look that up here. Yeah, we covered that in your other amendment, Mr. Chairman. So, offering number three.
Okay. DOT number three has been withdrawn. Brings us next to DOT number four.
DOT number four, Mr. Chairman.
Motion to adopt DOT number four. Is there discussion? Is there objection to the adoption of DOT number four? Hearing none, that will be adopted. Brings us next to language number three, which is, I think, we just covered, but we need to remove that amendment. Senator Lehman.
Chairman, I won't be offering this amendment.
Thank you, Senator Lehman. Language number three is withdrawn. That'll bring us to a short at ease. Open. That brings us next to municipal and unincorporated section. Senator Adams.
Move. Number one, Mr. Chairman.
Motion to move number one. And Senator Adams, if you'd give us...
It was just basically technical in nature, just correcting figures that was submitted to my office and language change on all these projects, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Adams. I held this just so we could check that with Lead Finance, and this is normal routine as we did on the other amendments offered by the smaller communities. So I have no objection to municipal unincorporated number one. Is there any objection to this amendment? Senator Kelly?
What's the effect of, on GF of this mere routine technical amendment?
Zero.
Zero.
Yeah, it's net zero. Net zero.
Thank you.
Other? Other discussion or objections to municipal unincorporated number one? Hearing none, that will be adopted. Before I go to our laydown amendments, Senator Adams, we had held DOT number seven open. You wasn't sure if you wanted to...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm withdrawing number seven. We had taken in amendment number two, two of Bethel's and one Cotsview, and I won't be offering that one. The other one, Akachek, has already been taken in previous appropriations. Thank you.
DOT number seven has been withdrawn. That'll bring us to our laydowns that we had. First one I have is C and ED, Commerce and Economic Development, or Community, or something. Number four is offered by me, Senator Parnell.
C and ED number four. Chairman, I move C and ED number four on your behalf.
Yeah, all members should have those. They were laid down on the table this evening. It's just zero effect on general fund. It just moves the grant to... What does it do? It looks the same to me.
Should add a community and economic development moves to resources.
Oh, and Department of Natural Resources. That's correct. Okay. Is there objection to C and ED number four?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask my standard question here. Is this an operating or a capital?
It's a capital.
That's your going to give me a standard,
I believe this
standard
is
a, answer.
What
if
is
we
it?
Don't have
this
the
is money for the films and pictures that are in the Historical Preservation Office that need whatever you do to them to preserve them. One-time appropriation. Is there objection to C and ED number four? Hearing none, that will be adopted. Brings us next to CNED number five, Senator Adams.
Move number five, Mr. Chairman.
I'll object just for explanation, Senator Adams.
The Department of Community and Economic Development recently received notification that an additional $500,000 in federal funds have been authorized for the Denali Commission Program. There are no match requirements on this particular appropriation. The object of this grant program is to strengthen rural communities by helping capitalize on other potential to diversify and expand their economies through the use of natural resources and by developing new economic activity in a non-forest-related industry. For the past several years, the department has received $200,000 from USDA to address the long-term viability of rural areas and focus on enhancing the overall quality of rural life, primarily through natural resource-based solutions. This additional authority will bring the mini-grant program to $700,000 in program receipts, federal receipts.
Thank you, Senator Adams. This is straight from the Denali Commission to the Department of Economic, Community and Economic Development.
That's correct.
Okay, I have no objection to this. Other discussion on CNED number five? Is there objection to the adoption of CNED number five? Hearing none, that will be adopted. What am I doing here? Senator Farnell, would you move E and ED number two?
So moved, Mr. Chairman, on your behalf.
This is education early development. This is for a grant to name recipients, the Alaska Aviation Heritage Museum in Anchorage, a $50,000 one-time appropriation. Motion to adopt EE and D number two. Is there discussion? Senator Phillips.
Objection.
Further discussion? There is objection. Roll call, please.
Senator Lehman?
Yes.
Senator Adams?
Yes.
Senator Wilkins?
Yes.
Senator Kelly?
Yes.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Senator Phillips?
No.
Senator Donovan? Senator Parnell?
Yes.
Senator Torkelson?
Yes.
Eight yeas, one nay.
So by 8-1 vote, E and ED number 2 has been adopted. Brings us next to language number 9.
Move number 9, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adams, explanation, please.
Number 9 has to do with National Petroleum Reserve. This is standard language that has always been in the budget books. And basically, this, under Alaska Statute 3705530 and Federal Law 42 U.S.C. 6805, it allows us to receive the Department of Community and Economic Development that administers the grant program. Municipalities impacted by the NPRA oil and gas development may apply for and be eligible to receive grants to alleviate the impacts. As you know, BLA had recently had a lease sale, and the state estimates that for the next 10 years, we will be receiving approximately $2 million per year to the state that goes to impact communities. And we all know that this year we'd like a portion of that to go to impact communities, portion to the permanent fund, portion to school public trust fund, and a portion to PCE. But this is very limited money. It's just only 2 minutes per year for the next 10 years.
And this is just appropriating for next year.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. So this would be an annual, since we're starting to get revenue from the NPRA, we'll be estimating our receipts and doing this annually, I would imagine.
That's
now,
correct.
As long as the payments are coming in. Is there objection or other questions on language number 9? Senator Lehman.
Chairman, Sarah, is this the same money that you promised us last year could be available for another use, or is this some other money?
So this is the same money. We've used the $40 million that we got. We sent 28 to the impact communities, of which 12 stayed with the state of Alaska, of which $3 million went into the permanent fund, almost less than $1 million went into the school public trust, $8 million for PCE. And this, you guys will have to debate this next year or the following years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other discussion on language number 9. Is there objection to the adoption of this amendment? Hearing none, that is adopted. Before we go to language 4, just in case there's anybody here, we will not be taking up Senate Bill 261 tonight, which is the needle.
What kind of bill?
Noodle bill.
What kind of bill?
We are, Senator Kelly has been working on a committee substitute, and the drafters don't have it ready for distribution. So if there's anybody on teleconference or any audience, I apologize for that late announcement, but we will take it up in the morning. Okay, that brings us back to language number 4. Senator Green.
Yeah,
move
language number 4.
Motion to move language number 4. Is there discussion?
Objection.
Senator Adams, discussion?
My objection is in the past history, this money was borrowed, what I would say, borrowed from the Railroad Energy Fund. This money belongs, I think, in that particular pot. It shouldn't be used in this particular fashion to be reappropriated to any project. It should go into that fund, then appropriated that or that fund. That's, you know, just a policy call, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adams, other discussion? There is objection on language number 4. We have a roll call, please.
Senator Kelly?
Yes.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Senator Phillips?
Yes.
Senator Donnelly?
Yes.
Senator Lehman?
Yes.
Senator Adams?
No.
Senator Wilkins?
Yes.
Senator
Parnell?
Yes.
Senator
Torkelson? Yes.
8 yeas, 1 nay.
So by 8-1 vote, language number 4 has been adopted by the committee. Senator Parnell, could you make a motion that direct led finance and led legal to make the technical adjustments so we can get that on there?
Chairman, I would move that we authorize legislative, legal, and legislative finance to make the necessary technical adjustments to the bill following our committee action.
Objection to that?
Mr. Chairman.
No, Senator Donovan.
Does that include just minor language changes to just refine specific amendments? On DOT number 9, the word shop should have been site. Can I make that motion?
We will so note that. Mindy, will you note that? That'll be fine. We also had, on language number 4, we actually amended that last night. I just want to note for the record that we changed the Department of Administration to Department
Community
of Community
and
Economic
Development.
Thank you. Senator Adams, your amendment ready?
Yes.
Okay, let's take a short at ease while that's being circulated. We have been given the amendment, which is DPS number 3. Senator Adams.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have Ken Bishop from the department come up here. Just basically what this amendment is doing is taking the money away from Southeast Energy Communication Upgrade. It's a new project, and it'll be only partially funded, and we'd rather see the money go into aircraft and vessel repair. And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to move amendment number 2.
Senator Adams, I'm going to object. For one, I don't see what you're moving around here. The first line, I guess you need to walk me through it. You're moving $50,000? Is that what we're doing?
The actual amount of...
Go ahead, Mr. Bishop.
On the record, Mr. Chairman, Ken Bischoff, Department of Public Safety. Mr. Chairman, similar to DPS Amendment 1A, which reduced the Southeast Communications Emergency Communications Projects by 53.5 and increased aircraft and vessel maintenance by the same amount, we're attempting to do an identical amendment only for the remaining balance of general funds in the Southeast Emergency Communications Project.
I remembered it was more than this. So even after DPS 1, there was something like $200,000 there, wasn't there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Donnelly, there was a $50,000 other fund source from the oil spill response fund that I wasn't comfortable that we could make compatible with vessel and aircraft maintenance.
Well, what is the effect of this again? Now, this amendment doesn't make much sense to me.
No, it doesn't.
You're moving $1 million?
Mr. Chairman, 171.5, the remainder of the 225 started out originally in Southeast Emergency Communications.
Yeah, but I'm looking at Mr.
This amendment doesn't do much of anything that I see. Senator Donnelly.
I'm looking at DPS 1A, and in that one we reduced the amount of the emergency communications upgrade from 275 to 221.50, or actually a total general funds 171.50. That's why this doesn't seem to conform with that at all.
You're giving.
Are you just trying to take that $50,000 that, so, which was the other funds line item there?
Chairman, what we're trying to do is basically take the remaining money of the Southeast Emergency Communication Upgrade, and that line should be at page 16, line 30, amend to 0 there. Move that. What this does is move $171,500 up to page 16, lines 20, aircraft and vessel repair and maintenance. And that's what we're all just shifting that.
But after, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Donnelly.
But after 1A, there's 171,500. There's 171,500 still in the Southeast Emergency, plus 50,000 of the other funds.
Senator Torgerson, if I might, Stanley McConnell, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. The amount that was funded by in the draft bill for this project and then subsequently amended down was not enough to leave what we considered to be a viable amount to do the project. So rather than have a Southeast Emergency Communications project that was so underfunded, we would rather have that money in the aircraft and vessel maintenance area because, as you know from the earlier impact statements, we have problems having those vessels out and available and ditto for the aircraft. The $50,000 that Ken referred to was because we had a portion of this overall project that would have helped with oil spill response. That's not something that is an acceptable funding source for the aircraft and vessel repair. It was an acceptable funding source when we were trying to put together a communications plan or system that would help that particular activity area as well. So rather than have money that's not in a sufficient amount to be really usable, we would rather put it to a place where we very badly need it to keep the aircraft and vessels in operation.
Senator Wilkins, what was the original amount? That was their number one priority, and now it's not enough money to make it.
The original request was $400,350, of which $350,350 was general fund. And that was to purchase the equipment and to install the equipment. Is that, if I'm reading this right? And what we funded was the amount sufficient to purchase the equipment without the installation.
I'm going to object to the amendment. Other discussion on DPS number 3?
Chairman, there's a technical problem with amendment 2 because it doesn't, while it changes the line for aircraft maintenance repair,
just zero, okay. And the other fund is 50.
Senator Torgerson, in response to what Senator Wilkinson
Emily McConnell, go ahead.
We don't want to have a situation where we have the equipment and can't install it.
I'm still opposed to the amendment. Further discussion? Roll call, please.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Senator Phillips?
No.
Senator Donnelly? Senator Lehman?
No.
Senator Adams?
Yes.
Senator Wilkins?
No.
Senator Kelly?
Yes.
Senator Donnelly?
No.
Senator Parnell?
No.
Senator
Parker? No. 3A, 6A. So by a 3-6 vote, DPS number 3 has failed to be adopted by the committee. I believe that is all the amendments that we have. Is that correct, Mindy? No amendments? Okay. Or no.
Chairman, I would move SB 192, or CF for SB 192 from committee with individual recommendations.
The motion to move the bill from committee with individual recommendations. Before I ask for comments, I want to thank Tracy Carpenter from Ledge Finance, Terry Kramer from Ledge Legal for all their work on this, of course, Mindy and our staff, and the folks at our staff that did a lot of work, James, from Senator Donnelly's office, Kara from Senator Wilkins' office, and Llewellyn from my office for the thousands of hours that went into this up to this point in time. A motion to move version H as amended. Is there objection? Hearing no objection, moves from committee with individual recommendations. We will now take roughly, Mindy, how much time do you need? 10 minutes. We'll take a 10-minute recess while we call in the changes to Ledge Legal. Order. I want to thank all the members for their hard work on the capital budget also, and I've everybody had a lot to do with getting that thing out of here. So we'll now go down the agenda as posted. The first bill up will be House Bill 180. This is a bill introduced by Representative Cowdery. It's inoculating the manufacturer, use, display, and delivery of controlled substance while children are present. So if you want to give us the brief, we've already heard this bill, so tell us where you're at and what it's doing.
My name is Connor Sullivan. I'm aide to Representative Cowdery. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you remember, House Bill 180 prohibits adults from knowingly allowing or encouraging a minor to enter or remain in the immediate physical presence of the manufacturer, use, delivery, or display of drugs. This crime is punishable as a Class A misdemeanor and is meant to send a strong message that drugs and kids don't mix. I appreciate your support on House Bill 180.
Questions of the sponsor staff? We have Blair McEwen on off-net to testify. Blair, are you there tonight?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, go ahead. Do you have testimony for us on House Bill 180?
Yes, I do. Very briefly, Mr. Chairman. Okay. My name is Blair McEwen. I'm Deputy Director at the Alaska Public Defender Agency. Our main concern with the bill is that people don't often have the greatest possible choice about where they're living. If two spouses are living together and one spouse starts using drugs, we don't want to have a situation where the other spouse would have to leave during the middle of the night in order to not have criminal charges brought against them. With this bill, if somebody in the house is using drugs and the person's making even pretty good efforts to try to keep the other person away, we still might end up with a criminal prosecution. And we see things like this sometimes in child in need of aid cases, and I think the best way to handle it is through that type of proceeding rather than a criminal proceeding. So just very briefly, that's our main concern with the bill, and I wanted to put that on the record, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. McCoon. Is there questions? There are none. Thank you for joining us tonight. This brings the bill back before us. Is there a discussion on House Bill 180?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adams.
I move that unanimous consent that we substitute for House Bill number 180, finance amended, with the company fiscal notes be moved out of committee with individual recommendations.
Motion to move House Bill 180 with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes. Is there objection? Hearing none, House Bill 180 moves on to rules. That brings us next to House Bill 272. Introduced by Representative Halcrow, an act relating to tax assessment for home rule general law municipalities that qualifies for low-income housing credits. We do have some folks on teleconference as well as some folks here. We'll start first with Mr. Wiley Brooks.
Affordable housing. What I'm here to talk about is are to speak against the special interest legislation. That's what I believe this bill is. My recommended income profit is for approximately 50 investors. Most of them are small investors who only own a single-family home or a duplex or a fourplex. Some of these properties are in competition with the projects that were constructed with low-interest tax credit funds. These small investors don't even know that House Bill 272 exists, and neither does hundreds of other income property owners in the state. There's really not an effective property owners association in the state. If there was, I don't think you would be considering this bill. No one knew about it but the local banks and the commercial lending departments.
Hey, sir, thank you for your testimony. Greg Dyrod, also in Anchorage.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm Eric DeRoot. I'm a real estate broker here in Anchorage. I'm also a member of the Anchorage Board of Realtors Legislative Committee and the Alaska Association of Realtors Legislative Committee. And I'd like to pass on that the Alaska Association of Realtors Legislative Committee discussed the bill and unanimously opposes the bill because it dictates to local assessors how to value their properties. And I think it's another unfunded mandate that will impose reductions in the revenues to cities without offsetting funds. And I think it's a bad policy because it will impact every property owner by increasing property taxes and unfairly penalizing people who have competing rental properties. And I really do think that programs like this sound good, but they really hurt the rental stock, and they create the shortages that we've seen on several occasions in the past. In one case, we ended up doing rent controls because there wasn't enough housing. So it's one of those that sounds nice, but it really hurts the rental housing, and it actually retards creating new rental housing in the market. So for that reason, I personally oppose it, and I think for some of those same reasons is the reason that the Alaska State Realtors Legislative Committee opposed it also.
Thank you, Eric. Jerome, State.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jerome Pape, and I'm representing myself. House Bill 272 creates in law favoritism that tilts a competitive rental market even further in favor of both for-profit and non-profit corporations that are already being subsidized under various government programs. These corporations have entered into direct competition with the non-tax credit landlords by using their subsidies to go after the military and ASHA subsidized renters. This bill does nothing for the low-income renter himself. Poor and moderate-income families renting housing not subsidized by tax credits will pay a disproportionate share of the cost of government services under this bill. The sponsors of this bill claim there is a dire shortage of rentals for tenants that would qualify to live in tax credit housing. We've been in the rental market about 15 years, and I've never seen a shortage of housing for good tenants. You're talking about the ones that have a couple pit bulls and unstable relationships and no references and a few other things. We won't take them, but the tax credit people don't take them either. The AHFC representative has testified before this committee that there's a real shortage of ASHA certificates. This has been the problem for several years. Not a shortage of housing, but the bureaucratic foot dragging and getting monetary assistance to those that need it. This program would take care of those people that need assistance in their housing. This bill creates in law a permanent favored class of landlords that provide housing built with tax credits and an unfavored class of landlords that invested their own money and will always pay an unfair portion of the costs of municipal services. What is the incentive for unsubsidized investment in the rental market when the competitor is tax-funded? I urge you to not send this bill out of committee, table it or kill it, whatever you can do. Thank you.
Conference. We have four people here that have signed up to respond to questions, but nobody signed up to testify. So Jeff Judd from Anchorage Mutual.
Anchorage has one more person to testify.
And who is that, please? Dave, go ahead.
My name is David Garrison. I'm associate broker, and I own approximately 34 units myself, as well as I help approximately, I'm a buyer's agent in the real estate sales, and we do about 8 to 10% of the income property sales. The people that that are out there that are small investors trying to get their first duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes to establish their income property are having to compete with these projects. These people knew that, such as Brighton Park, knew what the tax situation was going into the project, the same way that I have to know what the tax situation is whenever, as I purchase a piece of property. And I think now to change the playing field for them is wrong. Why don't you change it for all of us and give us all a tax break? But that isn't right, because I'm the services I'm receiving, I feel that we have an obligation to pay for those services. But those same services are being given to these people, and I think they should be paying their fair share. If I have my way, I would like to see that Alaska Housing pays for all their properties they own in Anchorage at the market value, and then maybe we'd be able to reduce the mill rate down to 10 mills without having to do big cuts. If we could get Alaska Housing to pay their fair share, we get Anchorage Neighborhood Housing to pay their fair share, Alaska Railroad. They're getting these services, but yet they're not paying or not wanting to pay for their fair share of these services. And I ask that, especially as we're looking at a 10 mil tax cap coming, that giving extra cuts, because that just distributes that cost right across the rest of us. And I hope you all will stop this special show interest. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else in Anchorage? Thank you very much, and thank you, David, for your testimony. Again, here in Juneau to respond to questions is Jeff Judge from Anchorage Mutual Housing, Dan Siebert from NBA, Lloyd Johnson from First National Bank, Mary Jane Mitchell from Anchorage, or Michael, excuse me, from Anchorage Neighborhood Housing. Are there questions for any of those? Okay, I have proposed a committee substitute. I wish the committee to review. I'm going to have my staff come up and walk us through it.
That would be version T. Mr. Chairman, is this at the Anchorage LAO?
I don't think it is.
Well, then I will make a request that it's at the Anchorage LAO.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Darwin Peterson, staff to Senator John Torgerson. In the prior hearing on this bill, the Senate Finance Committee on April 7th, the committee had in their packets a Senate committee substitute for this bill that was version I. Version T, which the committee is asked to consider right now, has a couple of main changes. One of them being on page 2, line 5, subsection 2, the governing body of the municipality is given the responsibility to determine the full and true value of the property that will be included in this low-income housing credit, as opposed to the assessor. And the governing body has an unlimited amount of time that they can make that determination. But once that determination is made, if you look down on page 2, line 17, subsection B, once that determination is made, the assessment for the parcel of property will remain in effect as long as the bond is outstanding.
Okay, so this is more of a local option?
Yeah. The municipalities have an unlimited amount of time.
The municipality must take a positive action by adopting an ordinance in order to make this happen. And once they make that determination, if they base it on the debt or the bond security of anybody, then they can't reverse that action by this legislation until the debt is paid off.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lee.
Chairman Darwin, is there a maximum time for that bonded indebtedness under the federal program? You know, we're looking at 20 years or more.
I guess that would depend on each bond.
You know?
I don't know.
Maybe somebody else can answer that. I think we might want to limit it to a certain amount of time because, the program itself might limit it. I'm not sure.
Certainly, we'd asked that question before, and that there are different time frames, but I think the standard is 10 years, but they want to go to 12, but somebody can certainly come up and talk about that. I will draw your attention to subsection A, which is, they may determine partial by partial, so this is still a positive action by the local government on whether or not they want to issue this credit or not. And I see we're joined by Representative Halcrow. If you want to come up, Representative, I know that we circulated to CS, and first there's a question from Senator Donnelly to Senator Abbott.
Just had a question about the CS.
Go ahead.
So I'm looking at page 2, line 5 through 12, that paragraph there. Could you explain to me, does that mean that once this legislation passes, then a governing body of the municipality would or could make a pass an ordinance that determined, and it would apply to everything that's existing property out there that falls under this category, or would they go parcel by parcel at that point?
Through the chair, Senator Donnelly, on line 13, it gives them the ability to go parcel by parcel, or they could select all of them, I guess, if they want.
Yeah, but I see that part down there, but I thought that was for after they initially did what is in paragraph 2 there. So it's paragraph 2 gives them the authority to go start going parcel by parcel, and then paragraph, that's 2 modified by A and then 2 modified by B, says once they elect that, they start, they're stuck with it until any bonded debt goes away, right? Is that how it works?
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Halcrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the record. My name is Representative Andrew Halcrow, representing District 12 in Anchorage. Through the chair, Senator Donnelly, Section 2 grandfathers those existing properties that are already on the tax rolls. And if I could, Mr. Chair, explain. Some of the testimony you've heard is actually incorrect, Mr. Chairman. These properties were built under these properties in Anchorage were built in Juneau and Fairbanks were built under a set of assumptions that they would be appraised every year at what their deed-restricted rents would be. And what happened is 2 years ago, they got a new assessor in Anchorage, and he started assessing market value. So what happened is these projects had been built under the assumption that they would be valued at level A, and then the rules have changed in the middle of the game. And where it hurts these is they are deed-restricted, and they cannot raise the rent high enough to meet the higher property appraisal. So Section 2 simply grandfathers in all of those existing properties, which we felt was one of our major concerns, to maintain the viability of those properties that have already been built.
Can you explain to me how that works? Because I don't get that from reading it, the grandfathering part in.
They still have to do it by ordinance, Senator Donnelly. I don't think it's an automatic grandfather. Unless I'm reading it wrong.
It does say on or, Mr. Chair, it says say on or after the effective date of this subsection shall be exempt from requirement of assessment. So I believe that says on or after. So when this takes effect, properties that are already built are therefore automatically qualified, and then from there, the municipality can decide whether or not they would like to either adopt a full-scale embrace of the low-income housing tax credit, or they can go parcel by parcel.
I'm just trying to understand how it works.
Yes, I understand.
So is the part that addresses all the existing property, where's that?
It says, okay, governing body, I believe that would be line 5 through 8 that talks about honor, this shall be exempt. Actually, the whole section, because you've got, for property that first qualifies for a low-income housing credit, on and after the effective date of the subsection, and that by ordinance exempt from requirement of mandatory assessment under number 1 of the subsection. That's what I'm reading it to say.
Do you have page 2?
Yes, through the chair, yes.
it just seems to be missing something for me, if that's the intent. It seems to me that all this does in Section 2 is say that for property that comes in after the effective date, the municipality shall determine by ordinance.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Senator Donnelly. It does read, actually, in talking to staff, Section 2 says that they have the ability, the governing body has the ability to grandfather. It's not automatic. They have the ability to grandfather existing properties. Excuse me. I was incorrect.
Okay.
Takes a positive action or an ordinance,
that
in other words,
correct.
By anything that exists on or after the effective date of this act, they have to pass an ordinance. So this is not a mandate, which is my understanding that the biggest problems in Anchorage, and the Anchorage Assembly has already weighed in that they're in favor of doing this with resolution of their body.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
They'll have to pass an ordinance to put it on their books to do it.
Mr. Chair, they passed a resolution 9-2 supporting this bill.
Senator Donnelly.
Sorry, but I'm just trying to understand how the actual wording works here. It says that...
Well, you got to go backwards. You got to start on line 7, and right where it says on, it's on or after the effective date of this subsection.
Yeah, but that on...
The governing body shall determine by ordinance.
Right, but it modifies the part before that. It says all property within MIST that first qualifies for a low-income housing credit on or after the effective date. What about those that qualified before the effective date?
Well, first qualified, basically, is that what you're hung up on, first qualified?
Yes.
The first qualified means that they have to be in the requirement for the exemption of U.S. 26 U.S.C. 42. You first have to qualify under that. Then you qualify by local ordinance. So you first, it does read confusing, and I went over with the drafter several times, but his legalese and mine aren't exactly the same.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Adams.
I'm having trouble, same as my Senator Donnelly there. The way I read it is that people that are presently in the program are grandfathered in on the effective date of this bill. Anybody new coming into the program, that would have to be determined by a local option. That's the way I read that paragraph, because
we'll send it back to one. Senator Donnelly.
And the way I read it is it doesn't even mention the people that are already there. It only talks about those that would qualify on or after the effective date. I mean, that's the way I read this, unless it's somewhere else in the bill that says that the people who have already qualified under that federal law are how are we dealing with those. It just doesn't even seem to address how we're dealing with those.
It's my intent to have a pure local option. If this confusing around this table, we'll send it back to the drafters. Senator Wilkins and then Senator Adams.
Mr. Chairman, so as I understand it, the municipality decides to go from full and true to income-based appraisal, and there's no look back with that decision. And then they go ahead under a certain set of rules, income-based. Then, do they have the ability to change back at some time, say the mood of the character of this municipality changes 10 years out? Do they have the ability to change again and again with no look back?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkins, they do not. See, simply because when these properties, when you would approve the construction of a low-income housing tax credit property, these properties would be built with the assumption that they're only going to be taxed according to what they can charge. So if you allowed this, then basically it would really make the bill, it would negate the purpose of the bill, because then you would have each local government be able to go back and say, well, Senator Wilkin, we know you built that low-income housing tax property 2 years ago, but we're going to now assess your full market value. So it does not give them, once they agree to allow you to build it, they have to maintain that assessed level.
Senator Wilkins, I understand that, but so once you build under a set of rules, those rules remain for that particular project.
Yeah.
And then 10 years out, and everybody along that line for 10 years works under those rules, the mood of the community changes, and they say, we want to go back to full and true. There's no look back to the projects that were built prior, but they can change at that time. So anyone that comes in under the new rule would then go under full and true?
They could change back, yes,
okay.
They could.
So they go back and forth, but there's no look
back.
Yeah,
but the properties, what we're trying to get away from is them allowing these properties to be built and then changing their assessed valuation process 2 or 3 years after the properties are being built.
I understand that part.
Yeah.
But where does it say here then the community can't change back, or is it not necessary to say that?
Well, if I could, see, here's Section 2, and I think what we're getting hung up on is Line 7, 26 U.S.C. 42, which I believe is the, I would assume that's the tax code that grants these low-income housing tax credits. So what it says is, the governing body of the municipality shall determine by ordinance whether the full and true value of all property within the municipality that first qualifies for low-income housing tax credits under federal law on or after the effective date shall be exempt from the requirement of assessment. Whether it says you've got either two things, it looks to me that you either have to say it's a low-income housing, you have to value it what we would call market rents, as defined, I believe, in Section 1, or full market value. So it basically is saying you have to take a positive action. You identify that these properties are come under federal low-income housing tax credit program. You have to either say we're going to do A or we're going to do B, and as well as the grand, and that would allow them to grandfather in. That's what I'm reading. That.
Mr. Chairman, I think isn't that covered in A and B on the first bottom of page 2? I think that covers it.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think it says what I want it to, but if it's that confusing, we've got to make this really clear what we're doing. Other questions? Senator Donnelly, is it looking like making sense, or?
I think it's confusing the way it's written. I mean, I read it, and I don't see how it applies to existing property at all. I see how it applies to everything that first qualifies on or after the effective date, but I don't see how it applies to anything that's already existing. If the word on line 9, if the word first was has, that has qualified, you know, well, then I think it would cover the existing property, but...
Mr. Chair, if you read this, basically the properties, let's take a snapshot of today. All the projects in Anchorage that qualify under 26 U.S.C. 42 are low-income housing projects. And what that says is on the effective date, on January 1st, 2001, regardless of how they're being assessed now, those projects, according to federal law, qualify for the low-income housing tax credit program. So it's more of an identifier. It's saying on or after the effective date, those projects in this program, you can do A or B. It's simply an identifier. See, because 26 U.S. 42 already applies to these properties that are already built. So regardless of whether it's on, after, or before the effective date, they're currently in that program encompassed in 26 U.S.C. 42.
The problem is they're qualified for the low-income housing credit before the effective date, not on or after the effective date. Those existing projects.
If they qualify before, if they qualify today, in April of 2000, on January 1st, 2001, they're still going to qualify.
But it says first qualified on or after, and they're already qualified.
Let me ask my staff to...
I think it says it, Senator Donnelly. It's talking about first qualifying. You got to do one thing first. We're not making a determination, neither is the local government making a determination, whether or not it has an IRS standing as a tax exemption. It first must do that. That's the USC 42. Once it's done that, then they can appeal or approach the local government to pass the ordinance. But first, it must qualify as a low-income credit under US 42.
When Jack wrote this thing, he was thinking that that's the first step, and then there's a second step, rather than as a modifier of when they qualify.
Exactly. First, they got to qualify under the federal code. That's the trigger. If they don't qualify under the, I know he wrote, and I argue with him, actually, like I said, his legalese is different than mine.
Yeah.
But first, you got to qualify under the federal code. If you don't qualify under that, you don't have any, you don't, this law doesn't cover you. And then once you do that, then you go to the local governments, and then they shall determine by ordinance whether the full and true value shall be determined under Section 1 of this bill. And then after that, you can go to A or B for partials one at a time and other things.
I think it's very confusing drafting, because the first, you would normally modify the next segment of the sentence. I mean, it's a modifier for the next segment rather than some future segment, and the next segment says on or after.
I understand.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, if I could have staff reply, I would.
I would just figure it out. Don't mess us up.
I think you have come to the right conclusion, but I think you've reached that conclusion by following the wrong road. And I might be able to get out the darkness of the mud.
Going back to drafting, I see it moving backwards. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jonathan Lack. I'm an attorney on Representative Halcrow's staff. If you go to page 1, line 6, section D and then subsection 1 says that if it's a low-income housing property that's qualified under 26 U.S.C. 42, you must assess it under the income approach. Section 2 says, however, if it's a tax credit property that qualifies on or after the effective date of this legislation, then and only then does the local governing body have the authority to make a determination on whether or not they want it to apply. So section 1 is a grandfather clause. Section 2 is the local option clause.
Okay. We're going to send it back to drafting and get something we can read. Senator Phillips.
Could I ask the witnesses in Anchorage if they understood what we were talking about? And if, I guess the bottom line question is that we're going to pass the buck down to the local government to pass an ordinance to give.
Senator Phil, direct that to one of them. I don't know which one
who's listening in Anchorage. Who's listening in Anchorage?
We're all thoroughly confused.
Okay, well, let me ask you, what's going on down here is that there's a draft amendment, I know you guys don't have it, that would allow the local government to institute this tax exemption or tax break. And I guess my question to you is, should we allow the local government to make this determination or just cut it off right here?
I think you should cut it off right here.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll set House Bill 272 aside and send it back to drafting and get something we can figure out. We next have House Bill 288. This is introduced by Representative Croft. It's a act relating to the creation of an aggregating factor for the commission of domestic violence in the physical presence of a hearing of a child.
I think it's Cot.
Who does it? Croft?
Cot.
Sorry about that.
I'm Denise Henderson, and I am staff for Representative Cot. House Bill 288 is an act related to the creation of an aggravating factor for the commission of domestic violence in the physical presence or hearing of a child. Basically, this bill would add a new section to Statute 12.5518. At the present time, committing domestic violence in the presence of a child is not included as a determining factor in the sentencing of the perpetrator. Currently, there is nothing in the Alaska statutes that would allow the judges to factor the crime's damaging effects on children into the sentencing. This bill would expand that list to include and to protect the special vulnerability of children. It would become become a major factor in determining the severity of the crime and the resulting sentence thereof. House Bill 288 would allow the courts to consider these factors to aggravate the severity of domestic violence when committed in the presence of a child or within the hearing range of a child. This is a valid criteria for the court in rendering sentence. Representative Cott feels that this bill is imperative as it would give the court system a new tool to further the fight against domestic violence and would allow the child to be included in the evaluation of harm.
Questions? Thank you. There is amendment number one. Senator Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move amendment number one. Actually, this is at the request of the sponsor. I should wait for objections.
I object.
This is at the request of the sponsor. This issue of, if you look at page two, there's only one word on page two, household. The Senate Judiciary Committee believed it was too broadly written, so the sponsor has come up with this definition of residence within of the victim. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll move amendment number one.
Discussion? Objection to amendment number one. Number one has been adopted. Discussion on the bill. Is there a motion?
Chairman, I'll move HB 288 with the accompanying this
job. Okay, motion to move 288 with accompanying fiscal note. Is there objection? Hearing none, that moves on to rules. Next, we have House Bill 437. Introduced by the House Communities Affairs Committee, it's an act relating to reinstatement of Native corporations and providing for an effective date. We have somebody to tell us about this. Bill, come join us. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bill Lawrence, staff to Representative Carl Morgan. This is a simple piece of legislation that would provide the opportunity for several Native village corporations that have been dissolved, a short window of opportunity to take care of some corporate business matters and become viable business entities. The legislation would extend the date to December 31 of 2000 that Native village corporations may be reinstated in accordance with state law. Representative Morgan was asked by the Ohagamute Traditional Council of Marshall for help. Their corporation had been involuntarily dissolved for the failure to file some annual reports, and they have just asked that they be given an opportunity to file those reports, pay their penalties, and become a viable corporation again. And that's pretty much the long and short of it, Senator.
How many times have we done this for these corporations?
I don't know the answer to that. One time I know for sure.
I think it was just a couple of years ago. Are they really going to do something? Or
they have indicated that they have are prepared to do something. The Ohag Corporation has said they will pay their back taxes of their penalties of $1,375 and are prepared to do so immediately.
What happens if they don't?
They'll probably wish they had. I don't know, Senator, the answer to that.
Involuntary.
I have no objection, but I just want to... I think I've seen this three times since I've been here over the last few years. And each year they come in. I don't know if there's an advantage to come in and changing the date all the time or what. I mean, I wish they'd warm up and do whatever it is they're trying to do. But, again, it's no impact on us.
somebody will get their back taxes. Are there questions of the sponsor staff? Is there a motion to move the bill?
Chairman, move the report and show.
Motion to move House Bill 437 from committee with individual recommendations. Is there objection? Seeing none, that will move out of here. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
And that is all we have on our agenda tonight. I do, tomorrow morning, we'll try the needle stick bill again, see if we have it ready. And we'll try to get something on 272. The bill packets are coming around, so make sure you sign those. Tomorrow morning, we will go down the list as posted. We will start at 9 a.m. And remember, we have a meeting tomorrow night at 6 p.m. So we will stand adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow.